Stream connection, excellent connection. Okay, running an advert. I'm going to hit go live. Hello, everybody, and thank you for coming to my live presentation. And I've seen lots of people are here from, lots of people from the UK, from Yorkshire, from Lincolnshire, all over the world. Tell me where in the world, Germany, all over the world. Where are you? Extreme Overland USA. It's just so lovely seeing all these people from around the world. I absolutely love it. It's the best part about live, just suddenly seeing all this. And lots of people all over the world. Okay, we got some really big news. I see Jeremy. Hello, Jeremy. Jeremy is my mate. We've just been to the Kimberley in Western Australia together. My mate he lives in Seattle, and we're doing some very exciting things in the US this year. We mentioned it on a previous little vlog video where I said hello to everybody who was at Overland Expo West. I believe it was a really amazing show. I mean, I've watched quite a few of the clips and videos and things of that show. I will be back next year, okay? You will see me there next year, and I'll probably have my own stand. So I'm taking you guys seriously. I've wanted to do it for quite some time, and now I feel I have the resources to do it properly, is to actually build a vehicle in the US and drive it around the US and actually really be part of the US overland community in a big way. Hello from Nevada. Hello from Nova Scotia, Northern California, Sydney. Now, time zones here, 7 in the morning, eastern states of Australia, it's around 9. If you're in South Australia, I think it's 8:30. They do half-hour time zones. Hello. I think in the Northern Territory, it's like 13 and a half minutes or something crazy like that. I don't know. Anyway, it's crazy. So in the United States, of course, it's late in the evening. In the UK, it's middle of the day. Is it the middle of the day in the UK? What time is it in the UK now? I did it at this time of year, so the most people around the world would be able to tune in within a reasonable hour, not like 2 in the morning. I wanted to mention something that I mentioned on a previous video, also on the competition video of the little Nikkor LR10 lanterns, I've always had the 4X Overland has always been a website. Of course, it started in 1996, but a website where people could go in and get lots of information and download the films I made. And it was a paid service. The video part was a paid service. The information part was free. And I've made that all free now because, I mean, you know, about a year ago, I changed the website and made it into a Netflix style website. So you could actually see, because YouTube, the playlists, they suck. They're awful. You can't, it's, so what this is a platform where all my videos are there in a proper playlist. Overland Workshop, there they are, the different years that I produced them. Big Expeditions, there they are. And you can watch them Netflix style, and you can comment, and you can actually, you know, watch them on a much better platform. But now what I've done, instead of a paid service, I've made it a free service. It's the new way things are done. So all you have to do is to go into 4X Overland and then register. You can't miss it. There are buttons. You can't miss it. And just register, and you can go and watch the video. It just, yes, I know it's 7 a.m. in Perth. I am in Perth, in case you didn't know. Ireland, midnight in Ireland. Okay, so thanks, guys, in the UK. A lot of you in the UK, and you're staying up late. I appreciate it. Really, Germany, 1 in the morning. Central Europe, it's 1 in the morning. Thank you for staying up. So that's the thing. So going to 4X Overland, it's just another way of watching the videos and making it easier for you to find the stuff that you really like and want to watch again, etc., etc. You can make your own little playlists and all of that kind of thing. And it's really, really rather nice. I'm releasing a few, and I'm taking questions, hey? So I am going to look out for questions about anything, really. I have had one, and I'm going to answer it a little bit later, and that is, what vehicle am I going to replace the troop carrier with? And I'm going to talk about it in a minute. So fire your questions, and I will try and pick them up and respond. The process of changing to the free website meant that I had to match what was on YouTube to what was on my database, because they weren't exactly the same. And I found a lot of stuff. For example, I did a trip in 2014 where I was in the Kalahari looking for areas that were outside the national parks. And outside the national parks meant fewer people, far less expensive, because even just going into the national parks with a vehicle and camping is very expensive. You know, really, I don't know, $600 a day just to be in the park? It's a lot. Is it that much? No, it can't be that much. 200 a day, maybe. 200 a day. Anyway, it's a lot. So I decided to do a trip. But back to my point. There were three episodes, but I only released one on YouTube. And I found that. And I thought, I've got to release them on YouTube. So I found actually four films, and I've made them into full-length features. They're all anything between 40 and an hour and a bit long. I'm calling them ASPW Chronicles. There are four films that will be rolling out over the next couple of months, and they are old. They're old shows. They're old TV programs, because remember, I used to do television. I used to do my show for television, not YouTube. It's been one of the most difficult things for me. Adelaide, Las Vegas, Melbourne, fantastic. Mitsubishi Outlander, it's a soft rotor. And I found all these programs that weren't on YouTube, because they weren't made for YouTube, they were made for television. And I've now compiled them into long things, and I'm about to release them. You'll see them, they're called ASPW Chronicles. So when you see those videos and you think, haven't I seen this before? Keep watching. The stuff that is on YouTube and very popular, I haven't repeated. So whatever I have, there's a bit of stuff repeated on YouTube, but it's short and you might have seen it before. Just keep watching. Okay. So that's quite exciting. That's going to come up quite soon. Meet and greets in the United States. Okay. So you guys in the US, you are going to... the questions are starting to come up now. Any recommendations? Land Cruiser Prado, Colorado for a month trip. Any recommendations for the vehicle? I mean, trips. You mean route through UK to Western Europe? I have no idea. Sorry, I've done no overlanding in Europe at all. What was I talking about? Okay, meet and greets in the United States. We will be, during the month of August, doing a meet and greets, but some will be more than just meets and greets. Some will actually be a sit down and presentation. Okay, there'll be ticket prices to cover our cost. There'll probably be, and I'm not making promises now for every event, but what we're trying to organize is basically to enable you to actually get to know each other, to actually spend some time, to actually, if you've got questions, to be able to, because in a meet and greet it's really quite difficult, and a lot of people that come to meet and greets hardly get to shake my hand. So I'm trying to make it more meaningful. And if we can just cover the costs of maybe a buffet I'll actually do a presentation. I'll actually do a half-hour presentation, tell some stories, and then a good, strong Q&A session, and then just mix and mingle with fellow overlanders. That's my idea. And all I'm doing now is I'm looking for specific venues. These are the cities in the United States. I will announce all the details on my website and, of course, on the channel. Seattle, Washington, Portland, Oregon, Boise, Idaho, Salt Lake City, Utah, Phoenix, Arizona, Las Vegas, Nevada, and Sacramento, California. That's seven. And I will be doing that over a period of 2 weeks in August. I'm also going to be doing some filming in Oregon and filming in Utah. So I'm going to do a little trip. What about vehicle insurance to ensure you receive the correct compensation and not just the book value of the vehicle? This is from an Australian chap. Good question. In some countries, there are specialist insurance brokers that actually, companies that actually cover vehicle for the added thing. In Australia, I don't know. I have managed to do it through my insurer, because my vehicle is no longer regarded as a car, but as a camper. So the camper value was added. So wish I could give you more information, but I am pretty confident that that product exists in this country. Maybe get onto some of the forums and start asking that question. Somebody all the way from Perth. Hi. I'm looking for questions, guys. Interesting questions about your build, about drips. Wouldn't you like to cross the Darien Block, Colombia and Panama? I think of one better qualified than... You know something? I would never travel across the Darien Gap. It's full of really bad guys. And I don't particularly about... I don't particularly want to get kidnapped. Yeah, I avoid... There are certain countries in Africa that I've never ever been to. Jeremy has mentioned that we're talking about doing something in Denver, Colorado, as well as another city. So if we can squeeze it in, we might get that far east. We're working on it. So you guys in Colorado, just keep watching, because we're going to try and sort out something. But that's an also-ran. That's a... from Jonathan, I did a uni assignment on you, and your integrity and honesty in reviewing should be valued by companies. We know we've had problems in the past. What do you think? Things are better now? Okay, it's a fantastic question to ask. I was actually thinking about doing a video on it, but I'll keep it short and sweet. The different ways of earning income doing this kind of work, they're all acceptable. Some are based on product placement. Luckily, most of us, we're quite intelligent. We know when it's product placement. There are laws now in Europe. There are laws coming around the world where if you do something that is paid for, you have to admit it. You have to actually say so by law. I don't believe that is the law in Australia. But, sorry, it's only orange juice. It's not even fizzy. And that's okay. As long as you know it's a product placement, they are reading a script, they're presenting a script. I've never felt good about doing that, maybe because it's not that I wouldn't trust them, because what if so-and-so from All Four four-wheel drive action or whatever, you know, and they do product placements. What happens if he really likes a product? How does he, maybe he just really likes the product. See, so it's difficult for them too. But they have to finance their shows, otherwise you don't have a job. You go and, you know, wash windows. I mean, so I can completely understand that. Is it getting better? Well, I think we are getting smarter. I think the viewers are getting smarter. We need to be discerning. But don't discount something that's a product placement that is bad just because it's a product placement. You know, don't automatically just, you know, and I've had it too. And when I was brand ambassador for BF Goodrich, I actually said to my audience, I'm not doing any more tire reviews because you have every right to question me. But my relationship with them started 9 years earlier. So I was completely happy with the product and I was, you know, and so. All right, I'm going to scan through some of these questions. Toyota Tacoma, four-door, Alucab, Canopy, Camper, what do you think? V6 or V manual, what do you recommend? Gasoline-only option, of course. Yeah, Alucab Canopy is all right. Canopy Camper, is it the Camper or is it the Canopy? I don't like the Camper. Canopy's okay. Pretty nice. I think there are better ones in the market, but it's not bad. I don't think much of the campers at all. That V6, unfortunately your V6, a bit of a gas guzzler, eh? Gee, drinks the stuff. Even if it's just a little 4 litre. You need to chip it. You need to chip it and try and get that fuel consumption down because your range is horrible. And I don't know, I'm not saying that chipping will work. Some chips will work, some chips won't, so be careful with just chipping it. But they're heavy on fuel, those 4 litres. Hi, Andrew. Greatest piece of advice you ever told? If you can give one piece of advice, what would that be to fellow subscribers? Okay. Yes, I would say go out and travel. Don't get trapped up by all the equipment and gear and stuff and you don't need it, you know. Travel, then you'll know what you need. Don't get stuff, then travel. It's the wrong order. That's the most valuable piece of advice I think I could possibly give you. No, I haven't. The Ford Raptor and the short wheelbase. Ford Raptor and a short wheelbase. Ooh. No, I haven't seen. Ooh. That could be nice. See, I've gone a bit. I've gone a bit American. I like big American pickup trucks. I've become. I like big American pickup trucks. If I had said 25 years ago, I'd said that, I would have been quite shocked. It's ridiculous. You know, because I'm an English person. I'm terribly laid back and don't really, you know, like big American things. Actually, I think they're fantastic. Right. Did I ever consider exploring Russia and Siberia? I was once invited by a bunch of Russians to go into the Arctic Circle in Siberia. But I watched their channel and I decided that if I had to travel 2 weeks, they live out of this tin box, it's a vehicle, it's an all-terrain vehicle, that it would actually kill me. I liked the idea of going to the place, but I didn't really like the idea of traveling with those guys. These guys were rough. These guys were the salt of the earth. It would have been fascinating, and if I had been 30 years old, I would have jumped at it in a flash. Yeah. So I decided, actually no. Is the new Jeep Gladiator a good vehicle to build as an overlander? Scott, I think so. I've looked at it, and I haven't looked at the real thing, but I've looked at all its specifications. I've looked at its load-carrying ability. Hey, you know, the biggest problem with Jeeps and carrying loads, one of the biggest problems, is that it has very, very small wheel bearings and quite a light-duty axle. Hey, upgrade the axle, the back axle. Upgrade the back axle. Very, very, it's not that cheap to do, but you know, there's so much fantastic kit available for the Jeep. So my inkling is, absolutely. Fuel consumption is not excessive on that vehicle, which is the one big thing. I mean, the 3-liter petrol is not a... It's quite heavy on fuel, but it's not extreme. It's not out of the ballpark. I consider fuel consumption from the big Toyota motors, the 5.7, and then there's a bigger one, isn't there? But I consider that extreme fuel consumption, which it doesn't kill them for overlanding, but it is but those big vehicles like Tundra can take a lot of weight, so you can put fuel in the back. So it's all about a matter of balancing payload, weight, range, all this kind of thing. I think the Jeep has huge potential. I actually want one, to be honest with you. I actually want one because I think of all the vehicles, well, certainly of all the vehicles in America that I could learn the most from developing as into an overlander is that particular one. And in terms of our autograph overland vehicle builds in the United States, our first port of call is the Jeep. And I've done some preliminary ideas, worked out payloads, worked out spaces and everything like that. And that's probably the one that I'm going to do. So, yes. F-150 is bloody awesome, handles well. This is from Shuey's Adventures. Heaps of power would make an amazing overland vehicle. Well, would it? In terms of fuel consumption, loads, I think so too. I do think it's a bit wide. I think the F-150 is wide. Same with the Tundra and that style of vehicle. Dodge 2500. They're a bit wide, but maybe, really maybe. I like them. I like them all. Jeep Gladiator. How would you recommend learning about 12-volt electrics for a dual battery setup and accessories? This is Francis. Watch my channel. There is more bull dust regarding electrical installation and battery choices and battery charging than any other single element in four-wheel drive overlanding thing. There is so much rubbish spoken about it. And I have had vehicles that I have rented in Africa where day two, the battery doesn't work. The battery's flat. I've actually had to open the bonnet and change wiring myself just so I could get the fridge to work because the battery wasn't being charged. And it had a system in it installed by competent professionals, but totally mismatched. The battery was mismatched to the charger. So the battery doesn't get charged. Well, you get charged a little bit. So it works. So people say, oh, it's working. It's charging the battery. Oh, it's frustrating. It drives me crazy. The thing about, you know, the lead crystal batteries being the same as AGM, just because they are also acidic and they have lead in them. I mean, really, I just listen to this stuff and I sort of kind of say, well, in that case, why don't they behave like lead acid batteries? They're not the same. This is a huge company that's investing and doing amazingly well with this new. If it was the same as an AGM, why are they doing so well? Why are so many people? And I'm not talking about the industry that we're in, forward driving, overlanding, changing the battery to their battery. That they're changing it because it's better at doing that job. People aren't interested in brands. They're interested in how well does that work in this environment. That's all I'm interested in. So the fight with lithium and that kind of thing, lithium's the same thing. It's an amazing battery. If weight is your biggest enemy, probably your first choice. If money is your biggest enemy, well, then you have to go AGM, but match the charger. Okay, so all I can say is watch my channel because I've tried a lot and I will be doing more on electrics because it's a big, big dig. And you know, it's so easy to get it right. It's really easy to get it right, but there are some principles. And the first one is be extremely careful when watching channels that pretend to be experts in solar, particularly solar. Shoot me in the head. It's funny. I read some stuff and go, oh, my heavens. It's not complicated. But there are some rules. Anyway, so it's a good question. Yeah. Not sure if Elf mentioned that the Jeep Gladiator will be available in a 3-litre diesel next year. Oh, is that true? Ah, for the US market, a 3-litre diesel? I'll believe it when I see it. It's fantastic news because I've driven that engine. It's a very nice engine. Really nice. The 3-litre, it's a very, very nice engine. So, wow. Why don't you jump to the Ultimate? I don't know what you mean by that, Kelly. Are you going to say Unimog? If you're going to say Unimog, write Unimog down there, Kelly. I'll tell you why the Unimog is not the Ultimate. Okay. Remote comms, VHF, sat phone, EPIRB beacon. Okay, take an EPIRB. EPIRBs are fantastic for emergencies. That's all they're really good for, emergencies. I use sat phone. I use it on a trip every 3 days. Phone the family. Hi, how you doing? Because you know, if you're traveling through, then you can get on the phone. So, do you need a sat phone? Not really. EPIRB's nice for Mark. Thank you, Mark, for that question. How much would you enjoy building and using a Jimny and trailer overlaying setup? And I know you disliked it, but I think it would be interesting. I do think it would be interesting. The Jimny was great. I mean, I know I whinged about the gearbox, and it really is a witless gearbox. But by the manual, if you're, you know. But I, even though the gearbox was frustrating, I think I still might even buy the auto. Because the auto was actually very, very nice off-road. I mean, driving over really slow. We didn't have any big rocks and things like that. I couldn't find anywhere. I really wanted to challenge it a bit more. But on its own, if you had a rooftop tent on top, or you could get your bulky stuff on top. So have a roof rack, bedrolls on top, mattress and thing on top, chairs on top, and then food and fuel in the vehicle, in the back of the vehicle, you're going to need to double the fuel with just two jerry cans. The fuel consumption wasn't brilliant. It was 8 liters per 100 kilometers. So it wasn't absolutely outstanding. It wasn't terrible, but for a light, compared to my troop carrier, I mean, 12 liters per 100 k's, and now you're talking about 8, so it's quite a lot less. But you're not being able to carry that much fuel. So I think the Jimny, pulling a small trailer is not necessary. So I've just been thinking about it quite a lot, actually. But the Jimny with a small overlanding, but you've got to keep that trailer light. And the reason why I recommended really big wheels is that if you want a trailer with the lowest rolling resistance, put the biggest, when I say big, I'm not saying wide, I'm saying big. diameter. On a trailer, make your trailer wheels bigger than your car wheels. The trailer wheels will have a lower rolling resistance, and that little chimney will pull it over a really difficult terrain. It really would. I think that would be a... the means to do it. I would love to do that. I think somebody, if somebody does a chimney with a full overlanding setup and trailer, I would like to do a story on it, because I think that vehicle is fantastic. I just think it's a breath of fresh air. And people are actually comparing it to, the Land Rover 90. The Land Rover 90 is better off-road. It has bigger wheels. It's about the only reason why it's better off-road, actually, because it has much bigger wheels. Inside space, the Jimny is more comfortable than a Defender by quite a long stretch. It's much more comfortable to drive. It's much easier to drive. It doesn't have the payload of a 90. So while the 90 space inside is a bit bigger, now, when you're looking at the two outside, you'll say to yourself, oh, the 90 is much bigger inside. Actually, not really. I mean, with the Jimny, you don't have the B-pillar sitting here. It's in its proper place. So in terms of driving comfort, the Jimny is far more nicer to drive. It's got a far better ride. Extreme off-road, no. The Jimny is not... I mean, a 90 you can do extreme off-road. Well, we're talking about overlanding. So, yeah, the Land Rover is going to make a better overlanding vehicle than the Jimny because it can carry more weight. It's got better range. Okay, but in terms of pure just space, very similar. You'll be surprised how similar they are. Budget overlanders would be a great topic. Well, I agree, but budget overlanders in themselves, I'm not sure if it's a topic all on its own. Because to do a budget build, everything is difficult, because what vehicle would I build as a budget build overlander? One vehicle I would consider is, say, the Land Rover Discovery 1. Now, they are troublesome vehicles, but they're cheap as chip. You can buy them for nothing. Spare parts are pretty cheap, not from Land Rover, but from other vendors. And you will learn an enormous amount. I mean, what could be better to learn? I had an old Range Rover. I went through the same thing. To learn about overlanding with a vehicle that's that basic. And it costs nothing. And they're nice to drive. And they're great off-road. And so... But there are certain things you have to address with the engine. There are certain things you have to address with the gearbox and the suspension. Get an old Jeep Cherokee. It's the same thing. Cheap as chips. Pretty basic. Not particularly reliable. What a great platform to learn. They have specific things. So I can't go through every vehicle. And the most important thing are the specific things to keep the vehicle reliable. Every vehicle is different. In terms of getting stuff in the back, chuck in some place where you can sleep. Make sure you've got some gas in a bottle and you can cook some food and go. Really? There you go. I've done my video on budget overlanders. I mean, I'm being flippant. I agree. It could be a subject on its own. But to be honest with you, I'm not sure how to tackle it. Okay. You've got a Disco 2, TD5, Paul. You know the engine problems with that vehicle. They're easy to fix them, and then the engine's actually quite good. They do have some issues, as you probably already know. Once you've done them, those TD5's a good engine. It's a good engine. Just have those things done. It's the same thing. It's never been a favorite vehicle of mine, the Disco 2. But actually, it's a good car. You'll find it's again, a bit troublesome. But if you're happy to work on it yourself, see, with those vehicles that are potentially troublesome, if you're happy to work on them yourselves, then what's the problem? Work on them yourselves. So if you have to send it to the dealer every time something goes wrong, oh, you've just then your priority has to be reliability. Otherwise, it's cost too much. Hello, Boston, Massachusetts. What about Mahindra then? What about Mahindra? New South Wales. Okay, Unimog. Okay, so Cali, yes, Unimog. why don't I like the Unimog as an overlander? For the same reason I don't like a Sherman tank or a... It's overkill. It's just... They look fantastic. They are incredible off-road, and that's the problem. They're too good off-road. They're too good off-road. If you get a Mog stuck, bogged in mud, and they do stick in mud. Sand, generally speaking, they're very easy to get out of sand. Mud, cloying mud, when they go down, you cannot pull them out with an ordinary four-wheel drive. You will not pull them out with a truck. You will have to wait for another Mog or a bulldozer. I mean, and in terms of driving them on the open road, it's a truck in the big sense of the word. This is not, it, they do not eat up the miles. They're hard work to drive really long distances. When I was on the Canning, it was 2007, the Canning Stock Route, which those of you who don't know, the longest public track in the world, 1,600 kilometers of nothing, fantastic. There was a Mog and he had two punctures. I didn't have any punctures, nobody else, and there was one place in the middle where we actually camped with other people. The rest of the time we were completely on our own. And there was a Mog there with two punctures, and the trouble is he was wider than the track. So the edge of his tires were running in the edge of the track, and he was picking up muck, two punctures. So, and he was unlucky because they're prone to punctures, but they're too good off-road. And why do you need something that good off-road? I mean, if you're going to do the Congo in the wet season, yeah, you're going to need a Mog. And there are probably a few other places around the world where nothing else will get there. Fine, you're going to need a Mog. Otherwise, do you need a Mog? No. So that's kind of my feeling of the Mog. As amazing as they are, and difficult to repair, you need lots of special tools, and, you know. Okay, somebody knows somebody with a Jimny in New South Wales, I think, is in Brisbane. Hello, Denver. Hello, Boise, Idaho. Finke Desert Race Live, Hugh Jazz. Ah, are you up there? Okay, interesting. Big race in Northern Territory, if I remember correctly. Shoot me if I'm wrong. We're always in the mud. Kelly says, oh, your Mog is always in the mud. It's pretty good in mud. But when you get stuck, oops, have other Mogs with you. What did I think of the Kimberley? The Kimberley, the Kimberley shoot was tough. It was a difficult shoot for a number of reasons, and the main one being the flies were extremely bad. And the trouble is with flies. I mean, we weren't getting used to them, but you know, we were living with them, and it was okay. But for me to capture content and do what I do with lots and lots of flies is extremely difficult. We actually cut our trip a little bit short. I've got the videos, they're on the editing thing. We had an enormous amount of fun. It was not an easy shoot. But and the Kimberley also, my conclusion of the Kimberley, which is, this is a bit of a spoiler, so block your ears. My conclusion of the Kimberley, if you want to get the most out of the Kimberley, go by boat, don't go by car. I mean, it was great being in the wilderness and it's beautiful countryside and it was great. But you want to see the majesty of the Kimberley, you go on the water, not on the land. I would say that would be something I would probably recommend to people. Okay, anybody, if you want a question, there is at the bottom, there's a super chat button. You can click and donate, and then the question comes up in a big fat highlight, and I will definitely get to that question. Wheel track conversions. Chris, wheel track conversions for 79 series. Will it stand up to the rigors of serious four-wheel driving? Oh, no. Would I stand to the full housing conversion? Okay, it's a good question. The width correction on the Land Cruiser is the standard Land Cruiser axle is narrower than the front, quite a bit, by 150 millimeters. It's enough for it to be a handling issue. It's not a serious handling issue, but if you're towing, it's a serious handling issue. And No, I think that the extended axle, because the one that I did, the multi-drive one, was the exact question I asked. I said, "What are the tests? What are the test results?" And he said they worked out that it was, I think, subject to correction, 15% stronger than the standard axle. They'd done all of the tests, the bending, twisting, and half shaft twist tests and spline tests and everything, and they'd done the comparison between the standard axle, and they estimated, and I think he said to me it was 15% stronger than the standard axle. Okay, so as far as I'm concerned, yeah, I think it's safe. It's a bit stronger than standard. The standard is not a weak axle. I think that the full axle conversion, it's quite a bit heavier. How serious a driving are you doing? Are you doing really serious off-road rock climbing? Then maybe it's worth the full axle conversion. But I don't know. I'm quite happy with mine. And I'm going to talk about my next build in a minute. Would you consider doing a video discussing the difference between touring and off-roading? I'm going to do a video right this very second, the difference between touring and off-roading. Off-roading is going off-road. Touring is going long distance where you're carrying high payloads, lots of, you're carrying fuel, you need lots of range, you need water, you need accommodation, sleeping, you need a cook, you need to support yourself, you need safety gear, you need a bit of recovery gear. You would have a recovery gear box this big, whereas if you were overlanding, you'd have a recovery box this big. Off-roading is off-road. Overland encompasses some off-road, but the purpose, the goal of overlanding is not to go off-road, is to explore beautiful places. If you have to go off-road to do that, then you're equipped for it. That is, in a nutshell, how I see the difference between off-roading and overlanding. Okay, Mercedes-Benz, the Baboon Trail Unimogs. Yes, a Unimog would walk the Baboon Trail. It would walk it, no problem at all. It's rocks, climbing rocks. It'd be unbelievably uncomfortable in a Mog, but you could do it quite easily in a Mog. I did in a Land Rover Discovery 4, LR4, don't need a Mog. And the defenders with me walked it. Well, they didn't walk it. They still need to pack rocks. It was a great trip. Okay, any recommendations for beach camping? The only thing I can think of is you need wind shelter. You need some kind of protection from the wind if you're beach camping, because when the wind gets up on a beach, of course, it can be quite tricky. But have some kind of tarp, some kind of wind break for beach camping. Ozzy, Chris was excellent. He came now, Chris. I haven't met him about a year ago or so, and he came with us. He used to live up in Broome, of course, which is quite close to the Kimberley, and he was our unofficial guide, and we had a ball. We had a really, really good time. He's part of the show, and he was very valuable, showing us places that there's no ways I would have found them. Not a chance. So that was because, you know, the trouble is with me traveling through Australia, I don't have a lot of local knowledge. I'm gaining local knowledge. When I go to Southern Africa, I've got huge amounts of knowledge because I've done it already. I'm 20 years, 25, 30 years ago. Yeah, more scary. In Australia than I was, if you know what I mean. I'm still learning. I'm still trying to understand. So I'll go back to the Kimberley. I'll go back to then. I want to do Canning Stock route again. I want to go up to Cape York, and I want to do all of these various things. I must say I've fallen in love with the Australian coast. I mean, the coastline, the beaches and the coastline. Just, it's gobsmacking how beautiful it is and how varied it is. I have a question here. Is there a better tyre than the KO2? Okay. The KO2 is a very good tyre for overlanders because it's very good on the tar and the asphalt, and it's good in the rough because it's very tough. Its weakness is mud. It's quite a good mud tyre, but it's not a great mud tyre by any means. So if your trip has got a lot of mud and you've really got to you got a challenge with mud that comes up constantly, I would upgrade to a mud tire. Now, at the moment, I'm thinking about changing my tire because I no longer have any association with BF Goodrich. They've said to me I can have as many tires as I like, of course, but I wanted to try some of the Mickey Thompsons. And I've been kind of just getting lots of information from different people about the best tires out there. And I am very, very tempted to try something else so I can learn about something else. I mean, I've been using BFGs now for 10 years. I think it's time I tried something else, don't you? That's really my motivation. I still think they're very good tires. But I must say, though, okay, so I've got a little story here on the tires. Tire pressure monitoring systems. You saw my review on the ARB. It was one of the ARB tire pressure monitoring system was and remains the worst product I've ever reviewed. And so I got another one made by Marsden from DigiOptions, I think there was the website. They contacted me and said, would you like one of these? And I said, yeah. And they said, please be gentle. And I said to them, have you seen the previous? And they said, yes, we've seen the previous review. So I said, well, if you're confident in your product, I actually said, is it easy to set up? Yes. Good. That was the only thing wrong. It was impossible to set up the AIB one. And when I did kind of get it, it gave me false readings. Okay. So on this trip to the Kimberley, driving along, beep, beep. Now, what I'd done is we was late in the afternoon. We were looking for, it was windy. So I drove off-road and I was looking for, there was a kind of these red rocks, beautiful red rocks. And I was trying to find a place to park and set up camp. And I was ahead of the convoy by not very far, half a K, 1 kilometers. And I thought, oh, this is really nice. And I got out and the flies just went bam. And it was terrible. Within 2 minutes, and I saw them coming, and I rated them. I said, no, it's going to be impossible. So I drove out, and as I drove out, beep, 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 tire pressure monitoring system. And you know what my first reaction was not because, oh, you've got a tire, but, oh, this stupid machine. That was my first reaction. I looked at it, and it was going, and I was running 3.4 bar. It was tar road, and there was a gravel section we'd taken, very short gravel section, so I was still at tar road pressures. And I looked down, it was 2.5 bar. Beep. Beep. 2 bar. Oops. The tire's got... It's working! It's actually working! It's doing its job! So I saw this flat thing, and I went straight onto the flat bit. Got out. Cut. Like this in the sidewall. Have no idea how it happened. No idea at all. 3 days later, I had another puncture. Stone right through the tread. It's all on the videos. So first time I've had two punctures in one trip in at least 20 years. 20? Maybe that long. 15. Long time. Long, long time. Michael asks, I just bought a Prado 98 model, just started enjoying four-wheel drive, just wanted to do a game. What Prado did you use years ago? Now, mine was a 1998. It was the Prado 90 series. It was a diesel, had the 3-litre diesel with a KZTE engine, which was not sold in many markets, KZTE. It was a good engine, but not a great engine. I liked it very, very much. And I tell you, that's a first-class car. The first class of vehicle, that the 90 Colorado, they call it in some countries. There are so many driving around here that are tattered and torn and still running. It's very common here. So it's a very, very well-built vehicle. The Prado 90 is an extremely well-built vehicle. Better than, I think, the 120 and the 150. But 120 is good too. 120 is good too. It's a good vehicle too. Sherry's Adventures. I drive a 150 Prado. I'm coming against the GVM limit at present. Do you recommend GVM upgrade to get a different vehicle? You know something? If you're getting close to the GVM of the vehicle, you're getting close to the vehicle's limits. This is the problem. The vehicles are designed for a certain weight, and the GVM is not just there for safety. It's not just there for rollover. It's also there for the vehicle is designed to go off-road. Can it go off-road with the extra load that you're carrying in the back? Okay, so now what are you going to get that's got a higher GVM than that? What are you going to get that's got a higher GVM than a Prado 150? You're going to have to go Land Cruiser. Okay, a lot more money. Is it a lot more money? Can you afford it? Is it better? You know, you must look at both. I know to give you good advice on that is tough because, I mean, what can you take out? A friend of mine, you know, from my crossing the source of the Okavango River, which I did in 2010 with my good friend and ex-client Jaco Angelini, and he had a 100 GX like I did, and we actually, it was a couple of years after the trip, I had an opportunity. I was in a workshop, and there was his vehicle, and we were experimenting with weights and things. And I said, Jacko's vehicle, how have you used that thing? Because it's got a lot of stuff. He was 40 kilograms over GVM, empty. Empty. He had so much stuff on that car. Man, there's so much stuff that he never used on that trip. Two tables on the back. You only need one. Come on. You know what I'm saying? So have a look what you can take out. Be like a, think motorcycle, then you'll know what to take out. Because the motorcyclists do these kind of trips and they carry nothing. They are amazing. They are absolutely amazing. Scott, how do you balance building an overlanding vehicle that is your daily driver? That's quite tough because, well, how do you balance it? You make things modular. So in other words, if you're going to do a system inside the vehicle that is takes up all the interior space, figure out something where you can take it out. And when you're going on a trip, two of you lift it up, slide it in, and strap it down. And to make that quite easy to do. Rooftop tents. Use ground tents. Do you really need a rooftop tent? Because a rooftop tent is very heavy on fuel. It uses a lot of fuel. The little Jimny, for example, recommended fuel consumption 6.7 liters per 100 kilometers. We got 8.5 as a result of the rooftop tent. You work out the percentage. That's quite a lot. So that's fairly typical, actually. It's fairly typical. You're talking 3 liters per 100 kilometers, 2 to 3 liters every 100 kilometers. Work out the cost of that. I'm a big rooftop tent. Is it really worth it? Particularly the big square ones, the big ones that, you know, do the open up like that. Is it worth it? That kind of thing, I think, would make a difference. And again, you look at it and say, what do we need, what do we don't? You can leave all of the stuff in the dashboard exactly the same. It's cool. You're going down to get some milk from the thing and you feel as if you're on a trip just by going down to the shop to get some milk. Leave that stuff. That's nice to have. It's the stuff in the back. Make it modular and portable and think about what you've got on your rack. That's the way I think I would handle. The troop carrier that I've got now I can use it as my daily driver, but it's a two-seater. I don't do that much daily driving. Gwynny's got quite a new Corolla, so we use that as our daily driver. And we're quite happy with it. So that's the way I would look at it. Thank you for your contributions, everybody. Really, really good questions this morning. Really good questions. I get 4x4 overlanding being very comfortable. What is your opinion on using product catered more for dual sport adventure motorcycle overlanders? Okay, so the motors, as I said before, motorcyclists, they know their stuff. They have some really, really interesting kits. So if you're talking about weight and challenge with weight, then the motorcycle fraternity are the ones to talk to and watch. What are they using? There's some such nice equipment catered for the touring motorcyclists. A lot of it. Henry, what 4x4 would you buy in the USA? I'm about to buy one in the USA, Henry. The Jeep, the new one, the four-door Gladiator. I think it has enormous potential. It's still compact. It doesn't have stupid fuel consumption. Does it have the payload capacity? Oh, it's borderline. It's very borderline. But you can, there's so many great products to upgrade it. We upgrade our cruisers here. We spend money on them to get them right. I mean, it's true. You could take a 70 series Land Cruiser and do the canning stock 30 times without doing a single thing to it. You would have to replace the shock absorbers fairly frequently because it would beat the hell out of them. But it's designed for that. Jeeps aren't. Prados aren't. Tacomas aren't. But we still modify them because the Land Cruisers that are built for it are so flaming uncomfortable. So we change the suspension. And then once we change the suspension, what happens if we hit a kangaroo? I hit a kangaroo, another kangaroo. In fact, I didn't hit the kangaroo. It hit me straight into the side of the Land Cruiser. Wham! Broke the wheel arch. So we put bull bars on it. So in the United States, what are you going to hit? You're going to hit elk. If you're going to, in a country where you're going to hit elk or something, there's a big risk of that, then you're going to need a bull bar. Otherwise, why are you fitting a bull bar? To fit lights on it? There are other ways of fitting lights on it. So again, it's a kind of saying something like the Jeep Gladiator. It has a payload question mark. And I don't know at this stage if it's going to be an issue. But my gut feel says no. My gut feel says actually going to be good overlander. Maybe even a great overlander. Maybe even a great overlander. So I would love to get my hands on one and build one in the United States. In fact, I'm trying to organize that. This is what I'm actually trying to do right now. I want to prove that it can be. Right. looking for other questions, guys. Any other questions? What is the best year D-Max? I wish I could help you. I don't know them well enough to be able to give you a recommendation. The D-Max is a good vehicle, and the Isuzu make a very underrated vehicle. I think it's the most underrated of all the pickups, actually. It's really good. I mean, the one I took to Zambia in 2015 was stock. It was the bee's knees. It did the job. It was comfortable. It was light on fuel. It was great. And it's well built. It was rough, eh? Curious if you think the 235 85 16 is too small for a Suburban. The Suburban is more of a street. Is the Suburban is more of a kind of a SUV town car, isn't it? You see, the thing is, with a skinny tire, you're going to get decreased asphalt performance and increased performance on many off-road surfaces. Is it too skinny? I reckon it might be. But again, I don't know the Suburban well enough to know. Get other people who have got Suburbans, but my gut says, a bit too thin. See, very few thin tires and skinny tires are actually available. Okay, I'm going to get to the point now where I'm going to talk about my vehicle that I am building. The process, I've been filming it. The thought process, it'll be a separate video. And I eventually got down to the following three vehicles. And yeah, two of them are Toyotas, one of them is not. And the reason why that happened is that I visited the guys at Patriot Campers in Brisbane. They do some pretty awesome trucks. And the one vehicle that interested me the most is the Land Cruiser 200 Chopped. Because what I'm putting on the back of my vehicle is a camper that is I'm working with Quick Pitch to develop. It's based on their old one, but their old one was too complicated and too heavy. It was fun. The concept was just better than anything I've ever seen. I love the concept, but it was so we are now working together to develop it and hopefully going to release it, not to the public by the end of the year, probably the public by about a year's time now. So I'm working with them. Okay, some guy's talking about no match for bull bars, no match for moose. No, a moose or even a cow. Even a cow. Oh, in the Kimberley video, we met an Aboriginal guy who the previous night in a 100 series had smashed into two cows. You must see the mess of his car. And he had a big ARB bull bar. The bull bar just crumpled up and folded into the engine bay. He was fine. He walked away, and he was just like a big storyteller. It was actually quite fun watching him tell the story about what I think of new Cain, my recent video Prado, my recent video Golden Boy on the new Prado. I talk about it there in a recent video. Freya from Yorkshire, what do you think about ideal overlanding tire size? Overlanding tire size, 255/75 is okay. R16, that's okay. 255/75 is fine. 265/75 is 285/75. They're too big. They're too heavy. They're too wide. The fuel consumption goes up. The handling goes for a ball. They're big wide tires, prone to skidding on the top of mud. If they're not digging through, they skid over the top of it. You lose traction. They just spin. You've got to drive them then at really low pressures to try and just, instead of them, you know, biting through. You can't pump them up hard enough. They won't bite through. I'm generalizing, but they won't bite through. You can let them right down, and then at least you've got, it might be slipping, but it's a larger area, so it grips a bit better. So, but not 255/75 on depending on the vehicle you've got, or top, but if you've got a Land Rover, you're from Yorkshire, if you've got a Land Rover, 235/85 R16 is the tire that defenders adore. They just love them. The defenders love narrow tires, and that tire is a brilliant size. two-man pop-up tent or swag? Man. Two men in a pop-up. Nah, get swags, guys. Couple in a pop-up? Fine. Not two blokes. No. Okay, Lyle. Do you think that old 4x4 trucks are just as capable as the new ones? I'm building it. Yes. The thing is that the new ones, they have the traction control, so they don't need, while they have traction control, they also have lockers. So an old one and some lockers, answer is definitely as capable off-road. Are they as capable as overlanding? Probably more capable overlanding. I guess it's probably more. So, yeah, build old vehicles. Good. Chevrolet Colorado. I don't have an opinion of the Chevrolet Colorado. They're very nice. Their equipment levels are very high. I think you're talking about the one in Australia, Scott. Haven't driven it. I wish I could give you more information, but I haven't. I haven't driven it. The 98 Triton, the L200, is a very good pickup. I drove them a lot. Very good. One of the better ones. It was in the heyday of Mitsubishi. It was when Mitsubishi was making good cars. I don't think they're doing anything spectacular now, really. They're all pretty ordinary. The second generation Prado, which was not the rounded one, it was the previous one, which was 1998, that era of the L200 and the Pajero. Did I say Prado? Pajero. Of that date, they were so well built. They were good cars. They were good cars. Really, good choice. Lyle, good choice. I think the D-Max has the easiest access to oil filter in any vehicle. Fair enough. Would you plug the drain holes in the airbox after installing a Safari snorkel? No. No. They're there to, so if water gets in somewhere, leave them as it is. I'm not sure exactly which drain holes you're talking about, but in the car will have its own water drain system. You allow that large drain system. Not sure precisely what you're talking about there. You're still waiting for the new Defender. We're all waiting for the new Defender. I think we've got probably a 25% chance that they'll actually build a vehicle that we will want, overlanders will want. I still think it'll have highly complicated suspension and Gearbox. And that to me kind of spoils it. Yeah, I don't think they will. I just don't think that's their market. They will build a vehicle that's very good off-road. You can mark my words, it will be very good off-road. But not great off-road, because they will have some limitations on the tires you can put on it. If you want a vehicle that is spectacular off-road, you have to be able to do something with the tires and adapt the tires to the terrain you're driving on. And if you can't, then they won't be. So it's kind of, I'm really... What is the best overlanding engines? Reasonably large, 3 liters and above turbo diesel engines are the best overlanding engines. They don't work very hard. It's an engine that doesn't work very hard, and because it's turbo diesel, the air's clean, they clean up the turbo diesel engines now. They manage to get the emissions down really low, and they're under tuned, they're detuned for long life. Cooper SC Max will be your next tire. I had thought of the SC Max. I think the Mickey Thompson's got a better all-over reviews. But the SC Max has got very, very good reviews. It's very, very true. Your thoughts on the Jeep? Okay, now. Thank you, Dan, for saying that to me. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. The vehicle choice. Three vehicles I had. The Land Cruiser 200 chop. The thing is with, I was mentioning that I went to visit the guys at Patrick Campus in Brisbane. And I was very impressed with the vehicle. I had a quick drive with it. It feels like a Land Cruiser 200. Didn't feel really terribly, terribly different. It was a bit hard in the back, but we had no load at the back. But it's a 200. Pretty amazing vehicle. And they would be able to put a camper on the back of it. And I thought, that would be wonderful. The trouble is with the Patriot, for me personally, is that I like building my own truck. They do their product is a turnkey solution. There it is. And yeah, you've got a couple of tick boxes for options, but that's it. That's the vehicle, the suspension, bull bar, da 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 da. There it is. Boom. And I liked it a lot. But there were a few things I wouldn't have done myself. But I still could live with what they did. I think it would serve me very, very well. But at the same time, I looked at it and thought to myself, hang on a minute. Why am I changing the vehicle from a troop carrier in the first place? I want to... So my big question now is, can I do something better than a troop carrier? Okay, that's, of course, the question. Okay, so now, here's a vehicle, and I think... Yeah, this would be better in so many things than the troop carrier, but whoa, the reason why I want to do something better than the troop carrier is not because the troop carrier is bad or not performing. It's because this is what I do for a living. I build vehicles and I share my insights and everything with everybody while I build a vehicle, and then I drive it around and I okay, that's what I do. That's why you guys watch. If I buy a vehicle that's already built, how does that... And I thought long and hard about it because I really liked it. And I thought, actually, wrong thing to do. But I didn't take the 200 chopped from the catalogue because I could go and have one chopped. But then I thought to myself, that's a very expensive option. What could I do with the old choice of the Land Cruiser 79? Now, as it stands now, putting a camper on the back of a 79, all the weight is hanging off the back of the vehicle. There's too much weight off the back of the back wheels, and it wouldn't perform well. But a chassis extension on a Land Cruiser 79 is not expensive. Hang on a minute. It's not expensive. There's no body chopping to be done. It's just an chassis extension to get the weight forward of those back wheels. So... Oh, and the other one was, again, Patriot Campers. Their version of their Dodge Ram 2500. It's just awesome. What I was saying before about I like these big American trucks. It's awesome. Well, they've done a brilliant job. They've done a superb job on that thing. I thought, oh, and it was expensive. it was expensive, and but the same thing applied. I could, ooh, but they deliver a turnkey solution. It's finished. That's it. No. So the announcement is, I will be, this is the first time I have said it on YouTube, I will be building a Land Cruiser 79, I love the 70 platform, with a chassis extension, which is not expensive, and then I'm going to put the same camper on the back. But my whole thing is, with that vehicle, is I've got to get the weight, even with a chassis extension. I can go 300 millimeters, which is, what, that much? Okay, I can go 500 millimeters. So I will decide what I do, and I've got to get the weight forward. No matter what I do, I've got to get the weight forward. I'm working with the guys at the Lead Crystal Battery. There's some new battery technology that they're bringing out specifically for our market, which I'm working with them, and they've shown me some stuff which has just been a complete eye-opener. And so we're going to be doing some new battery technology. I'm working with Radarc. We're doing some interesting stuff on the vehicle. They've got some new products as well, which is very, very exciting. And so that's it. Now you know. The Land Cruiser 79 dual cab with an extended chassis. How about that? All right, guys. Now you know. That's it. And I will be doing a video on my process of what I looked at and what I decided to do. Oh, so people are starting to wake up this morning. Sunday morning, people are starting to stir. Okay. Is it possible to increase the payload of the Commander Jeep Cherokee? Now, I'm not a big Jeep guy in terms of my knowledge and my experience. Another one of the reasons why I wanted to build a Jeep in the US. I want to become, because let's face it, how many manufacturers are building vehicles these days that are suitable for what we do? They're not that many. There are fewer and fewer. That's what I'm saying. And one of the best ones in terms of keeping the axle solid and things like that are vehicles like the Jeep, the Wrangler, the JK base. So I'm kind of excited, very excited to get into that and actually learn a little bit more about Jeeps. The Grand Cherokee is a very electronic vehicle, and it's a very, very modern vehicle, and increasing payloads of that is going to be specialized. It's not easy, and this is what I'm saying, that fewer and fewer these vehicles are suitable to what we do, because take the new new Land Rover Discovery, despite the fact that it looks pretty terrible, is an amazing vehicle. Forget about increasing its payload. Forget about it. It's not happening. It would be so complicated to do it, I would say not interested. Okay. So there you go. So I wish I could give you some more information about the Grand Cherokee, but it's a challenge because they're highly electronic and they've got all these different sensors and everything. But I'm sure there are ways of doing it, and there will be people who have done it, but it's not the ideal vehicle to do it with. Take the Patrick Camper's job ram through water and all the central lockings fail. This is very possible, but that vehicle is so high that you'd have to go through a meter and a half of water. And, you know, all vehicles have all of these electrics and things. And, you know, to be honest with you, I mean, I looked at the Dodge Ram and I just thought, wow. I didn't really take it that much further than wow, actually learning about it, really, to be honest. It was just such a first impression. Yeah, LC79, depend on, but 70 series Toyota is also badass, nice choice. I think it's a good choice. I think, and I'll wrap it, I'll make it amazing. I'll make it a really, really amazing. I've seen, there are so many 79 builds here in Australia. Mine's going to be better than all of them. Okay, Jake, what, your first 4x4, where do you live? Simple, cheap. If you can work on it yourself, something like a Land Rover, even. If you can work on it yourself. Early Discovery, fantastic. Simple. No electronics, or the minimum amount of electronics. If you're buying a diesel engine, don't buy a diesel engine unless it has a full service history. If you're in the United States, how about a really early Jeep? Full service history. Find a vehicle that has been loved. Find a vehicle that has been loved and be prepared to work on it yourself. If you're not prepared to work on it yourself, then you have to go Toyota. Why? Because they're probably the most reliable. But I'll tell you something now. you can still get dud Toyotas. Okay, you want a vehicle that's been loved. Old Cherokee, there you go. Old Cherokee, great. Find a vehicle that's been loved. They might be very well-built and reliable vehicles, generally speaking, Toyotas. You get a car that's been abused, it will cost you just as much as anything else and be as frustrating as anything else to keep running and fixing. So you're not immune. Don't think for once that you're immune just because it's a Toyota. You are not. Yes, my trippy awning is a Alucab shadow awning. There is a new awning about to be released. I wouldn't buy another shadow awning. It's one of the few things on my trip carrier that I wouldn't buy again. I won't go into the details. Don't get the Alucab awning. There are better ones in the market. Um, 800 kilograms payload for starting out on overland trips. Your thoughts on 800 kilograms? 800 kilograms is quite good, actually. If you can get 800 kilogram loading, if you can pack in at that, then you're not being ridiculous with weight. It's not low, but it's not particularly high. If your goal is 800 kgs, then you're doing pretty well. It's pretty close to the goal on the troop carrier. A standard thing is 800. And yeah, it's about what I'm working with. I'm working with slightly less than that, actually. So 800 kgs is quite high, but it's not stupid. Of course, depending on what vehicle it's all relative, of course. Okay, I'm assuming your vehicle can carry that extra weight with no problem. Okay, I'm making that assumption when I say this. FJ Cruiser versus Jeep Wrangler. And they're both fantastic. Both fantastic. Love the FJ Cruiser. Very impressive vehicle. I don't see the Ram standing up to outback conditions over the long haul. Andrew, that's not a bad comment. I had that question too. Also very electronic and very, it was the kind of thing that where if my Ram stopped working, I would just go, what do you do with it? You can't even see in the bonnet, it's so high. I just like the idea of having that much torque. I think they would make amazing tow vehicles. I really think they would make amazing tow vehicles. I mean, really, you know. you're lucky. Your breakfast is getting cold. You're lucky. I don't have anybody to make me breakfast. Gladiator GVMW is up to 6,250 pounds. I think the Gladiator potentially could be fantastic. Ostend has a rooftop substitute. Do they? Has Ostend got a rooftop? I must look into that. Unimog is not on the cards. Guys, I will not, and I will probably never own a Unimog. As I said before, earlier on, Unimogs are too good off-road and too bad off it. And too, when I say too good off-road, if you get them stuck and you're on your own, you've had it. They're also complicated, heavy on fuel, and you're talking in Australia, you're talking about distances that are beyond, so no, Unimog not for me. You never finished your list of three possible vehicles. Jamie, I did. Land Cruiser 200 was the one. Dodge 2500 was the other, which wasn't really a serious contender, was it? Actually, for a while it was, for about an hour. And the Land Cruiser 79 with a stretched chassis. Those are my three final choices. And I've got a video, as I say, in the edit suite, and I'll put it together. I haven't quite finished it yet. Going through my my thought processes, because you must understand, my trippy is friggin' fantastic. Gee, it's nice. Just got back from the Kimberley. Gee, it's nice. I mean, it really is the bee's knees. Or as they say in Australia, the dog's bollocks. It is fantastic. But can I make it better? Can I make a 79 even better than a fully equipped trippy? That's my next story. Okay, so that's what it is. I'm going to have fun with this. I'm going to have fun with this. And I only decided about, 10 days ago, not even that, 5 days, not long ago, that it would be the Chop 79. I had on my computer all the time these things, the 200 and the all the time, doing spreadsheets and just and doing weight calculations and things like that. And I think the 79 is going to be better. I actually think it's going to be better. What do you think about 1,000 milliamp hour lithium portable batteries over inverters? Over inverters. What do you mean by over inverters? An inverter converts 12 volts into 110 or 220 volts. And they're talking about a 1,000 milliamp hour battery. So, yeah, I'm not sure of your question. I'm not understanding your question. Patrick Campbell have done a cab for the Gladiator in the USA. It looked awesome. Be something similar, Andrew? I would. No. Yes. Don't know yet. Maybe. I know Patrick Campbell is doing well. They've really come in with some interesting products for the Gladiator. Smart move. Smart move. I would have a look. I've had a look at some pictures of it. I don't know it well enough, but I've got some ideas. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe. But I've got some other ideas too. I've got some other stuff. Some other seriously cool stuff. Some products coming out on the market very soon. One being a new awning that is about to be released. It was released in South Africa, I think, last week. It's called the Quick Pitch Weather Shade. And I think it's called the Quick Pitch Weather Shade 20-second awning. It's just come out. I've not seen it with my own hands. I've been involved in a very small way with this design, in that the guys from Quick Pitch that I work with a lot have shown me pictures, they've shown me drawings, and we've chatted about it, clever with a capital C. Really, really, really clever. So that's coming out any moment. So if you're thinking about buying an awning, before you jump and go and buy something, have a look at that. Might be exactly what you need. Definitely worth waiting for, because it's seriously cool. Has drop downs, and it's instant, and it's and a huge amount of shade. I mean, huge, huge amount of shade over something that's the same size. Clever. Anyway, 79 series with extension. Not worried about being too long. Too long for what? So it's not an absolutely valid question, Dan, but too long as a daily driver? Maybe. For touring? No. Off-road? No. I was worried about the LC200 being too long. This has got less chance of being too long, because the LC200 extension is 650 millimeters. The longest Land Cruiser 79 extension is 500. I think 500 is enough. So, too long. Apparently, it improves handling a lot. Which the 79, of all the 70 series, the 79, it actually handles the worst. It's not that there's a big difference between them all. There isn't. The Troopy handles better. Somehow, the wheelbase is just perfect. But I've been told that that stretched 79 really runs beautifully. And you've got a slightly longer wheelbase than your average car, so on corrugations, a little bit kinder to you. Look, there are questions. I don't know. There are some questions. Get a Winnebago. Yes, Winnebago, and take a picture of it in the Canning Stock Route. I don't know if it's going to be too long. This is my job to find out. I'm not scared of getting things wrong, because I think that if something stands out at me and shouts at me, yeah, no. Like it did when I first tried a camper on the 79, that or 3 years ago, something shouted and said, "It's just not going to work for you. Don't do it. It's not going to work for you." And I think I was right. But now I've learned a lot. That same product is being made lighter, and it's being changed and adapted. And so now I'm revisiting that. But I know I have to lengthen the chassis. I have to. Seen the new Defender officials videos on the Land Rover Channel shop in Kenya last week, Stefan? No, I haven't. Actually, is it the same one as the one, the video that I did, which just looked like a Land Rover, and I'm still convinced it was an LR4 body on the new Defender chassis? I'm convinced of it. There were too many design clues to get away from it, okay, that I mentioned in the video. So the vehicle that you're seeing in Kenya, is it the same one as on my video? So Stefan, I would like to know if you've seen something, an update on that one that had all of the stripes all over it and had bits of gaffer tape, black gaffer tape around it, which was just basically, as I said, an LR4 body. And it's very easy to take an LR4 body. They actually come off quite easy, so it would have been quite easy for them to do that. I believe they did that to hide the vehicle. And they were testing the chassis and the drivetrain and the engines and things. Have you driven the 4Runner? I have not driven the latest 4Runner, but I have driven the latest Tacoma. Have you heard of problems with the BFG KM3 tires? I've heard of block failures. I don't know how serious they are because I haven't heard a lot of them. So normally when a product becomes a problem and it becomes a widespread problem, you start getting a lot of people complaining about them. So I haven't heard a lot of complaints, but I have heard some say that the KM3 is losing blocks in harsh terrain. I, on my trip, and it was absolutely genuine, as I said, I was the first guy to try them out, drove across Australia, and the area near Mount Dera road is just a tire killer. It's that kind of rock that just rips tires to pieces. And I only had damage, minor chips, on my right rear tire, which is the tire on the Land Cruiser that is prone to, takes most of the drive. It's the tire that takes the most wear and tear on the Land Cruiser. And it was minor damage, really minor. And I was very impressed with the tires. Mark has asked a question. How valuable is the ability to get from the back of the cab without going outside? That's a very good question. How will you make the new build more comfortable for editing? Okay, you're obviously a fan of the channel. You've been watching my videos. It's not valuable. You know, it's a really good... I mean, if you think about the logic of the troop carrier and a van that you can get from the driver's seat and turn around and get into the cab. Now, I've got to get out to open it anyway. So why would I? In what situation would moving be really, really valuable to move from the driver into the back or from the back into the driver's seat? I can in the troop carrier. I've never done it once. I have never moved from the back to the driver's seat. I have on occasion thought, oh, where's my X, Y, and Z? Oh, it's in the front, and I have leant through. I have done that. I don't know, a dozen times. Not that often, but I have done it. So there, yeah, that's quite useful. But in terms of having it, in terms of a priority and a design priority, it's not a design priority at all. Not even, no, I don't even think about it, to be honest with you. I'll make it I have to show, the new camper is amazing. I have got a small studio in there. And it takes me, the troop carrier to open takes me 10 seconds. This camper to open will take me 12 seconds. No, 10 seconds. Really fast. And it's in this big space. It'll be significantly better. Significantly better because it's significantly bigger. And in terms of the usable space. What have I got here? More questions, guys. I will be doing Overland in USA. I will be doing a proper review on Oman Emu's BP51s. But I want to put them on another vehicle. I've only experienced them with my troop carrier. And I am... building some vehicles for clients. The Autograph Project, I'm doing three troop carriers, building from September for clients. And I'm going to be putting BP51s in all of them. The ride is exceptional. Very good. But I want to do more because I want to try them with a different vehicle. And so very positive is what I can tell you right now. Very positive indeed. Thinking about planning a trip with Trekker Adventures to New Zealand with my dad camping out of the Defender with two rooftop tents. Trekker's great, guys. Zeka? Trekker. Great. Recommend them, definitely. Sportsmobile might be practical in terms of service and parts availability in North America. You know something, that Sam, the Sportsmobile, I had one in 2015, was it 16? I think it was 15. Whenever. I loved it. The Sportsmobile was fantastic, and I had it based on the E-Series Ford, which was nice to drive, it was easy to drive, ate up the miles, drank copious amounts of fuel. Man, did it drink fuel. It was a 10-cylinder. The fuel consumption was just ridiculous. So that's the trouble with that, but I loved it. I loved it. They have, Sportsmobile also have the Mercedes-Benz Sprinter, which uses no fuel by comparison, but it isn't a good off-road. It's not as good off-road, but we had the Sprinter with us on the Mojave Trail, and it walked it. It didn't have any difficulty at all on the Mojave Trail. So as long as you're not doing hardcore four-wheel driving off-roading, the Ford, the Mercedes-Benz Sprinter Sportsmobile, but they're pretty expensive. They're pretty expensive. I'd take one in a heartbeat. What are you going to use to build on the Jeep? Too early for that to answer that question, Henry. Hello from Ireland. I'm not going to buy a Suzuki Jimny for myself. No, I'm not. I'm going to buy a Land Cruiser, another Land Cruiser. I'm not. I do like it. I like it a lot, but no, no. What was the product you were using planning for the USA Sprinter van build? Oh no. Seamus, I don't know if I'm going to give that away yet because I'm not going to give it away yet. I'm going to use that same product. Maybe I'll use the same product on the Jeep. I'm not going to give it away yet. Ah, dear. Sorry. I got to keep some things back. See, I need to prove it first. I need to prove it that it will work first. Okay, before I say what it is. I might look like a complete Charlie. Hello, Charles from Tucson. what will the tray length and width be of the Extended 79? How much space are you playing with? Okay, so the standard tray is 2.5, is it 2.5? 2.6 meters, the standard tray. The new tray will be, 1.6 meters, the tray length, and the new one will be a dash under 2 meters. I can't remember. I got the figures somewhere around. I had enough. The challenge was, where do I put spare wheels? Where do I put, they're this wide, right? Where do I put spare wheels? So that's the big problem. Where do I put spare wheels? I can't put them at the back. Cannot put them at the back. But if I do, I have to have them swinging out so I can access the back of the camper. So, and I don't want to put a great big steel thing at the back, right, hanging off the back, lifting up the front. That's the trouble. So that extra space, that's what it's going to be used for. Now I have a choice of what I do with the spare wheels. Maybe I put the spare wheels behind the cab. Maybe I put the spare wheels on the roof. Maybe it gives me choices. Okay, so... Giovanni, hello Giovanni. Giovanni is from Brazil. He has been a fan of the show, I think, from the day I started it. He's been around for, I think he's my longest viewer. It's so good to see you, Giovanni. You're always around. And he lives in Brazil. Very nice to see you up and about on the channel. Have I ever considered using Recaro seats? Isn't that interesting? You should ask that. No, I have definitely, because if it was anything that I would change on my troop carrier, it would be the seats. I will be changing the seats and I will probably be going the Recaro route. Yes. But the very latest one that everybody's been saying, oh, it's so great for the cruiser because you have, because it's high ingress, so you're climbing into the vehicle as opposed to, you know, a car, you get into it. A four-wheel drive, you get up into it, you see. So when you get out of a seat of a high vehicle, you're doing this. So you're going over the squab, the side bolster. But not the side bolster here, but the squab at the base. If that's too high, it becomes very uncomfortable. So the recent, they've stopped making that particular model. So I'm doing a bit of research, but yes, I'm researching that right now. Okay, so lots of knives. Do you reckon? What about inner drive? Inner drive. Don't know about inner drive. Yes, Giovanni, it has been quite a ride. Yeah, you've followed me all the way. Is there anything else I wanted to chat about specifically? Oh, yeah, I did actually. So I mentioned earlier on about the website and now the viewing platform. All the playlists are now free. You don't have to, you just have to register. And I promise I won't inundate you with junk mail. I promise you don't, because I, you know. So go on to forexoverland.com. Just register. And then you can get my whole playlist. Everything right there. And I've... And it's not easy to find because the YouTube playlists really are not very good. And they're not easy to use. And this looks like Netflix, if you're familiar with Netflix. That's now free. And I'm going to be releasing some. It's designed for binge watchers. I love binge watchers. The videos are hosted both on YouTube and Vimeo, because some of my programs on Vimeo are actually in 4K. So you can now get the full 4K. Do I think I will ever get another Range Rover Classic? You know, maybe when I'm old and doddery and I'm too old to go on these trips, I'll actually find a Classic and rebuild it. If I was to build any vehicle, I would build a Classic. I would build a Range Rover Classic because my passion for them hasn't gone away at all. It's still... I'd love, when I see a Classic, I stop and look and stare and try and work out how old it is. And, you know, what do I think of propane as fuel? Okay, that's a good question. I use small canisters when I'm on my trips. I don't use big bottles because big bottles are a pain. They're heavy. You've got to strap and tie them down. If they're inside the vehicle, you must tie them down because they could be really dangerous. So, but why? I mean, that is basically propane. The thing is with the butane tanks, butane is very toxic. So if you're cooking with butane on the temporary, you know, it'll say use in a ventilated area. You must use in a ventilated area. There is, you know, butane, once it's burnt, creates carbon monoxide. It's very, very dangerous. So, you know, that's the trouble with those. But some of them, like I use in my partner's steel stove, that is pure propane. Fine, you can use that in a confined space. So as cooking fuel, propane, yes. Butane, be careful. And the big tanks are just, I don't know if you saw the thing I did in Africa, when Jeremy and I were in Africa and we were talking about these stupid big gas tanks, these old-fashioned gas tanks with these terrible burners, terrible KDAC, South African KDAC burners that are just rubbish. They are so bad. They're still selling them. And I want to say, wake up. You know, they were designed 30, and I'm not exaggerating, 30 years ago. They've not changed the design. No new technologies, no investment, nothing. Don't know about Chinese diesel heaters. I like the idea of having a heater in North America if I was to build a camper. You're going to need to come get a heater, and diesel heater is the way to go. Don't know about, I mean, I've used a Webasto heater. Hey, spend a bit more and get one that works. Buy a Webasto, forget about it. Just don't even worry about it. Why buy cheap? Why try and save, you know, $30? I just don't see the point in it. I know I could rant on and on, but I won't. Are military tires any good for overlanding vehicles with square treads? What are your thoughts? Well, I don't know enough about military. But square tread is going to give you a very loud tire. So my question is, are you getting them for free? Or why can't you just buy a tire from a good tire, BF Goodrich or Mickey Thompson or Cooper, and there are many others. Actually, they're becoming more and more now. Some really good tire manufacturers actually waking up to the fact that this is a good market and building a good, strong tire. There are some lousy ones. Yokohama Geolander, rubbish. Bridgestone 694, rubbish. There are some rubbish. See, that's the trouble. They'll market it as this great overlanding tire, and it just won't be. So you have to get onto the forums and chat to guys who are actually using the tires. There are some good ones out there. Why would you go military? So I'm not quite sure how to answer your question, because I'm not quite sure of your motivation of why the military tires would be something worth considering. You are welcome, Rexman, for the live stream. Can you mention to us a place you visit, US place that you visit, which you like so much? My favorite place in the US was probably Death Valley. I loved my trip there. Maybe I'll go back there. Death Valley was, and the trouble is the vehicle we had didn't have the range. Again, it was that old thing that we didn't have the range. And even in the United States, you need 600 miles. You need a 600-mile range to do any decent exploring. It's not much different in Australia. It's not much different. That's the kind of the minimum. We missed out a whole section that I wanted to do. Couldn't, because of fuel issues. So that would probably be my... Sorry, but... Okay. I see that... somebody has mentioned about he missed the early parts. I'm going to repeat now the cities. I'm going to be in the United States in August and September. I'm going to be doing a roadshow. It's a meet and greet roadshow. It's going to be more than just a simple meet and greet, but I will be going to Seattle. These are the cities where I'll be holding the meet and greet. Seattle, Portland, Boise, Idaho, Salt Lake City, Utah, Phoenix, Arizona, Las Vegas, Nevada, and Sacramento. Those are the seven towns. And we are thinking about Colorado. I'm not sure where it'll be. We're thinking about putting that into the mix. So I don't know exactly, but that's what we're going to be doing. So you guys in the States, I'm going to be in the States every year from now. I'm making quite a big commitment to you guys, and I think it's because I want to learn more and I want to be involved in your, you know, you guys in the States at the moment are building this overlanding industry, and I did that bunch of series. If you haven't seen it on the channel, it's about overlanding in the USA, and it was really me going up there and then finding out what was it all about, what was actually happening. And my conclusion was that you've actually been doing it all along. But now where there's this new word, overlanding, okay? And you've been doing it in a way. And now it's a case of, well, what's the difference between what you were doing before and what you were doing now? And the main difference is the fact that now you're building vehicles that can be completely isolated. They don't need to be plugged in to a campsite. So whereas before, you go and drive and it would be wonderful and that you would end up in a campsite that would allow you to plug in. Now, you look for some trees. That's the main difference. You look for some nice trees or a nice stream. And you're self-contained. You love this phrase, off-grid, which is a bit of an, becoming a bit of a catchphrase. And, you know, they have these vehicles that are off-grid, which are, I mean, I look at the Earth Roamer. It's a bit of a joke, really. I suppose you could use them off-grid. Maybe that's just my snobbery coming in here. But seriously, do you need a 72-inch TV? The whole point of overlanding is not to have a television with you. Surely. Surely. So I don't really get it. But that's the, hello Denmark, Cathedral Valley, I'll be doing a shoot in Utah. I will be doing a shoot in Utah this year. So That's really what it is, and I want to be part of it. You guys in the US were where we were in, say, South Africa, Australia 30 years ago. That's where you're at now. But you're lucky. When I got my first four-wheel drive, the thing was sitting on its, on its backside with nose, on the bump stops, on the back axle. Literally, I would drive along on the bump stops. There were no uprated springs for my car. None. Well, there were. They were made by Land Rover. They were worse than the standard ones. I'm convinced they mixed them up in the box because they weren't any different. I spent a lot of money on them and they weren't any different. You guys have got it lucky. However, the challenge is you've been inundated with all of this equipment and all of this. Some of it's beautiful. And you think you have to have it before you go overlanding. It's a trap. We didn't have that problem. There was nothing. I made my own packing system. It was extremely crude. It worked. It consisted of a box packing system. So, don't get trapped. Don't get trapped. Although it's sometimes nice to be trapped because the kit is rather nice. Thank you, Kelly. any more questions from anybody? Any questions? Okay, so I've told you, let out the secret about my new vehicle, which I'm actually pretty excited about. I've told you about the website. I've told you about the meet and greets and the tire pressure monitoring system. That I suddenly am now sold on tire pressure monitoring systems because twice on my recent trip to the Kimberley, it did its job. Isn't that amazing? Yeah. So I'm going to probably think about winding this up now, give another few minutes. Vico Daily is a good 4x4 for basement overland vehicle. I think it probably is, but again, it's, are you living out of it? If you are living out of the vehicle, if you are actually going to spend month after month after month, then something the size of an Vico Daily, yes, good platform. If not, then I think it's too big and just why? Yeah, that's kind of what I... How comfortable do you really need to be is the other question. Well, I need to be really comfortable. Well, then an Avico Daily has got enough space on it for you to build a great big camper on the back and be extremely comfortable. See, I'm not there yet. I'm not quite there yet. But I do, to me, the one thing about getting out of horrible weather has become really quite nice to be able to get out of a horrible cold wind. And particularly if I'm editing or particularly if I'm downloading footage and everything, getting back in the back of the troop carrier is really nice. And I know that if I built a traditional vehicle with just a canopy at the back with a rooftop tent or something like that, I would miss that enormously and editing wouldn't be able to happen. So that's the part of the troop carrier that I've got to make better. But the actual ride and the actual experience of driving and overlanding and fuel and payload and range and everything is probably going to be a little bit better with the 79. Probably a little bit better, but I will do a GVM upgrade. Although I'm going to work very hard at staying below GVM on the standard GVM, I'm going to do a GVM upgrade because I've had to be quite pedantic about it with the troop carrier. I'm still under GVM, even fully loaded with two people. will I be able to achieve that with the new 79? Probably not. But if I go over a little bit, it's okay. But you know, the trouble is with GVM upgrades, you just kind of relax. Oh, you just load stuff, and eventually it gets too heavy. And eventually, on really rough tracks, something breaks because of weight. So, Australian South Africans are the earlier in the off-road and overlanding. Not off-road, and they're not the earlier in off-road at all. No, I think everybody kind of did it together. But the Americans, the US, North America were ahead of the game, or certainly equal to UK and Australia when it comes to off-road driving. No, overlanding, touring, this kind of thing, yeah, you are behind. You are behind. It's just this new thing about being on your own somewhere and not at a campsite. I hate campsites. Campsites, I can't stand them. I want to be on my own. That's the whole point about it. And I think that's the point of overlanding, is to, you know, we were there and we had the whole beach to ourselves. You watch the, you know, Instagram post or something. People love that concept that this beach is ours. That's, you know, your thoughts on electric four-wheel drive. It's going to come. It is going to come. And again, it's got all to do with range. All to do with range. Because when you're going, electric four-wheel drive, there's nothing special about electric four-wheel drive. Because you can drive a four-wheel drive around, you know, stuff. But I'm talking about overland touring and electric. It's on its way. You've seen the early vehicles there. They're already working on it. You see, with a vehicle like a cruiser type, you know, pickup, Tundra, that kind of large vehicle can carry a lot of batteries because it has a high payload. So it's coming. It's coming. It's all battery. The battery technology is the big key here. They've got the technology with the electric motors. They've got the technology with the control systems. They don't quite have the technology with the batteries, but they're getting so close to it. It's definitely coming. It inspired me to get a 70 series and imported a 25-year-old 77 with a 1HZ. That's Celia. 1HZ. Okay, 1HZ motor. Make sure the timing chain has been changed. Timing chain. Timing chain must be changed every 100, max 150,000 kilometers. Okay? So max 100, you know, less than 100,000 miles. Timing chain. Change them. Just replace it. They break, and the motor is in bad shape after they break. Looking for other questions here. Don't lose the snobbery. It adds to the entertainment of your channel. Rubbish. Puff. When is Paul Marsh moving to Australia? I don't think Paul Marsh is moving to Australia. I have no idea that he's going to move to Australia. He lives in Cape Town. He's doing well. He's doing well. He's very busy. He's building overland trucks in Cape Town. He's doing very well. We chat every month or so. We have a nice Skype together and we chat about stuff. I will do another trip with Paul. I must do another trip with Paul. He's great. Great to travel with. They used to call it car camping. Did they used to call it car camping? I didn't know that. In the US. I didn't know that. Hello, Mr. MK, having dinner in Colorado right now. I hope it's tasty. I'm thinking about breakfast, actually. My H1HZ timing chain is coming up. Good. Don't leave it. It makes a mess when they break. And they don't break. But if they do, okay, so just change them. Extreme Overlander, you say you're really showing a show. You meant the timing belt. Yes. I'm talking about the timing belt. I'm talking about the chain drive that drives the crank, the camshaft. I'm talking about the timing belt that turns the camshaft. That's what I'm talking about. It's a chain. Okay. And it's inside. You take the front off. Fiddly. Difficult job, but change it. Dates. Okay. Overlanding dates for the thing. I don't have dates. August. Okay. I will have dates, but we're setting up and looking for venues at the moment, and we will have dates soon. August. It's the best I can do for you now, I'm afraid. So any other questions, guys? I'm just thinking about keeping this running because I've kind of announced everything that I'll talk a little bit about just as I'm waiting for questions, for those of you who have joined late, the Forex Overland website, accessing all playlists is now free. I mentioned that. But because I used to produce television shows and not YouTube, I've had to become a YouTuber, and this has been quite a big transition for me. And I found, as I've been putting up the new website with a Netflix style playlist and everything, that in fact there's a whole lot of stuff that I've produced that's never been online. But say, for example, there were some videos about something I did in Namibia and there were three episodes or two big episodes or whatever, and only the first one was ever put on YouTube. The other two, not on YouTube. I've created four videos, and the four videos are, I've called them ASPWIW Chronicles. So if you see an ASPW Chronicle video and you say, oh, I've already seen this, just stick around, because the first part of it you might have seen, but it's a whole story. And each, I think the shortest one is about 45 minutes, and I think the longest one is definitely over an hour long. So I've just put them in one shot, one story, boom, full-length feature film. Get yourself a nice cup of coffee and watch them. They're coming up quite soon. So I looked at them and thought, you guys haven't seen this stuff. And some of it's quite old. I think the oldest one must be 2014. I think the oldest one is 2014. So it's like 4 years old. So 5 years old or whatever. So thank you, Steve. I really do appreciate it. Poconos in Pennsylvania. We won't be out east, I'm sorry, to come and do any. You got a big country. Maybe the following year I'll do something in the east. How about that? I'm not promising, but how about maybe the following year? Because I'm going to be doing, so I can see myself in the States from March, April, May, maybe a bit of June, to do the Overland Expo West. It's going to be very important for me. And that's going to be, it's a place where everybody gathers, and I'll be there. And so I can see myself on a pretty regular basis being in the States. And I'm also thinking about doing a meet and greet here in Perth, guys in Perth. I'm thinking about doing a meet and greet here in Perth. I will announce it on the channel, and also announce everything on Instagram as well. I use Instagram a lot for announcing this kind of thing. So if you're not part of the Instagram, log in and become a follower, whatever. I don't know too much about it. Kate runs my Instagram, and she does extremely good job at it. So that's happening. And I'm thinking about doing it next month in July, because by August I'm in the States, and I'll be in August for a bit of July, all of August, and a bit of September, probably until the middle of September. Where might your aviation films be on your website? So I am actually busy working out my aviation films are on my website now. So if you go onto the website, you scroll down, you'll see aviation, and there's some films. Right now, they're only linked to part one. I'm actually going to re-upload them as the full episodes in the near future. But if you go onto my other channel, Be a Filmmaker, my other YouTube channel, you will find my aviation programs. Okay. I hope you enjoy them. I am going to be getting more into aviation on my part of my channel. I'm in the process of that now. I can't give you any more details, but it's very exciting stuff. Getting back into the air for me is, I've done some flying recently, as you've probably seen one of my videos, and hey, I can still do it, which is pretty exciting. And one always gets rusty very quickly when you don't fly. And I wasn't that rusty. I was quite pleased. So that's a big part of the channel coming up now. What is the average fuel consumption on your trips per kilometer? Okay, the Volvo TGB, the six-wheel drive. Okay, you're not going to get anything close to the fuel consumption that I get. I get about 12.5 liters per 100 kilometers is my average on a trip. It's somewhere around there. That's with a 4.5 turbo diesel V8. And that's pretty typical. I'm a light-footed driver. Speed limits here are 110. I cruise at 110. I don't really go over it. I don't see a need to. I'll go over it occasionally when overtaking some of the road trains. My cruise speeds, my average speed is probably below 100 in terms of the overall average. So, and that's what I get. I notice with the V8 that if I had to drop it down to 100 kilometers an hour from 110, I would gain 1.5 to 2 liters per 100 kilometers. Stat, just by reducing it by 10 kilometers an hour. So even with the new one, with the new gearbox, the lower revving gearbox, once you start going above 110 kilometers an hour, the fuel consumption skyrockets. It really goes up very, very quickly. So I can't really recommend an engine for you. Don't know too much about that particular Volvo. I know the vehicle. I know what it is to look at, but I don't know it very well. ARB bull bars, what are your thoughts? I will be fitting ARB bull bars to my new build. I think they make the best bull bar that you can buy. See, ARB, that's their bread and butter. They're first class. Their bull bars are first class. Thank you, Art the Aviation Films. You like that. Thank you. 80 Series is best all-rounder. 80 Series, they say that 80 Series is one of the greatest... stupid phone. Siri thought I was talking about it. I was talking about an 80 Series Land Cruiser. One of the best vehicles Toyota ever made was the 80 Series Land Cruiser with the 1HDT motor, which is the turbocharged version of the two-valve per cylinder 4.5 straight six. Brilliant. Outstanding car. But rare. Before I crawl to bed, what's the best place in the UK you've visited? You know, I did very little travelling around the UK. I did one marvellous trip in Wales. I absolutely loved it with the Range Rover Classic. I can't really tell you about the UK and places. What's the best places in the UK you visited? Will you come back? Yeah, I'll come back. I'll come back for a visit. I'll definitely come back for a visit. Would like to do something in Scotland. I like the idea of doing something in Scotland. Do you have any more trips to Africa planned? Yes. I will always go back to Africa. You can rest assured. I will go to back. If I could go to Africa every single year, I would. But I will go back to Africa at least every 2 years. I won't be in Africa this year, but next year I will. So if I look at the practicalities and the expenses and the time, Africa's probably going to be something I'm going to do every 2 years. That's a reasonable expectation. If I could do more, I would. Somebody asked me earlier, it was a South African guy, what do I miss about South Africa? Which is kind of a question I kind of expect from. But anyway, what do I miss? The fact that the bush is on my doorstep, the African bush is on my doorstep, and being able to do Africa trips is on my doorstep. That's the one thing I miss. I don't miss anything else. I've got a close friend in Cape Town. I miss him. I have one friend left in South Africa, just one. Everybody else is gone. So that's it, you know. Okay, I'm going to wrap this up now. You have a Land Cruiser 100 with the 4.5 petrol. Yeah. It's a great vehicle. Fuel consumption, suck it up. There's nothing you can do about it. I've tried. Well, I've tried with a 4.5 straight six and failed to get any improvement on the fuel consumption worth mentioning. So you have to live with it. Yeah, the 100 is wonderful. Wonderful vehicle. If you've got a nice 100 Land Cruiser, you look after it. It's a fantastic vehicle. In some ways, better than the 200. Did that lion ever come into your camp? Now, I'm not sure, Henry, which lion you're talking about and which particular camp you're talking about. On the recent Africa trip, no, did not come into the camp. You see, a lion, when it calls, it can be a kilometer away, and you'll hear it as clear as a bell. So, but when they make that sound next to you, the entire ground shakes. It's unbelievable. It's just ridiculous. Are you going to do a meet and greet in Sydney? I'll buy you coffee. I would love you to buy me coffee, but you know how to buy me a cup of coffee. Unfortunately, I won't be able to join you for the coffee. I'll just be able to make more videos. But I won't be doing a meet and greet in Sydney. Maybe next year I might do some meet and greets around the country. I don't really know, to be honest with you. I plan 2 years in ahead. I plan everything about 2 years in ahead. So this year's kind of done, kind of planned, and next year we are planning now, and big Australian trip next year. I know what I think I'd like to do. I think I would like to take the new truck. Nathan, appreciate it. Appreciate your comment very much. I think I'd like to do canning stock again. I think of all the Australian trips that has ignited my fire for outback travel in the US, it's the canning. How about taking the new truck and maybe not doing north south and this time doing south north on the canning. Maybe that. I don't know. It still stands apart above all the trips. It really does. And maybe July next year with a new truck. I won't. What I have learned, though, is that I know you Aussie guys give me a bit of a hard time about the flies. I find it, I mean, I can live with the flies and I can put up with the flies. And they bug me, but it's okay. It's not, you know, working with flies is what I find the most difficult. You know, and I know you give me a hard time about it because you guys are on holiday. And you just kind of, it's fine, you're used to it. I'm not on holiday. I'm working. I've got to get content. I'm working. Yeah, I'm loving it. I mean, that's why I'm there. If I wasn't there, if I wasn't loving it, I wouldn't be there. So the fly issue is that, so what I was going to say is that in Australia, I won't be doing any outback traveling before July. I will do all my outback traveling between July and September in the future because they make it too difficult. They just make it too difficult for me to be able to create the content. You'll see with the latest Kimberley thing, it was a fun trip. We had a great time. It's a good little story. You'll enjoy it. We did cut it short because the flies were very, very bad. I didn't get quite what I wanted, what I would have liked to. I still got a lot of nice stuff. It's still good. I mean, it was still great fun. Traveling with Jeremy is always a hoot. Chris was great. I mean, we had a great time. So, you know, you'll enjoy the shows. You will enjoy the shows. I'm busy editing them now. SW Idaho, overlanding. Thanks for the show. George, it's appreciated very much. Thank you for your comments. Okay, I'm going to wrap this up now. David asks, what about Tassie, Tasmania? I have a project now called 100 Islands. It is a serious project. I want to do a 100 islands in overland vehicles. I started with North and South Island of New Zealand. So, two down, 98 to go. Tasmania is close to the top of that list. I've got Tasmania, I've got Fraser Island and some of the islands off Queensland, apart from Fraser Island. I've got islands like Madagascar. That is on the top of my list. Madagascar and Iceland are right at the top of my list. Falkland Islands. Imagine doing something in the Falkland Islands. So I'd have to go and then do something in South America, and I still really want to do South America. I really want to do Argentina, so maybe something there. So that's another island. So I'm calling it my 100 island project. And again, it all depends on time and funding via Patreon. So you guys, those guys of you who are Patreons, thank you so much. You make this all possible. And if not, consider, I just say, buy me a cup of coffee. You want to buy me a cup of coffee? That's the way to buy me a cup of coffee, because all it takes is a cup of coffee once a month, and it makes these shows possible. It makes Madagascar possible. Thank you, all the good wishes here. from Tassie, flies in heat, awful. Okay, so yeah, you do understand. So I will do whatever I do in Tasmania, I'm going to do during the low fly season. I have to. It's one of those things that you have to do. It's one of the part of the learning process of learning how, you know, what works in Australia and that kind of thing. I'm learning, you know. Thank you, Doug, very much. People leaving now, that's great, guys. I'm going to wrap it up. Hello, Alaska. You're far away. You are about as far as you can get from me. You know that. Alaska is probably the furthest you can possibly get from. Newfoundland is the 16th largest island on the planet. Australia is the largest island on the planet, I think. Cool. cheap commando, is it worth making it for overlanding? Don't know. Don't know enough about the vehicle. And not really a lot of time to. Anyway, thank you for... Tasmania does not have flies. I'll come there tomorrow. Autograph boxes, are they ever coming to the USA? I'm working on it. No promises. I'm working on it. Trouble is, an autograph box is empty. It's full of air. It's got to find something to put in it so when we transport it, it becomes feasible. Otherwise, they're just too expensive to transport. It's just not worth it. So, anyway, Newfoundland, thank you very much from California. Himalaya trip. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Himalaya trip. Challenge is finding support. I need a vehicle and support. I wouldn't go into the Himalayas driving on my own. It would be madness. Canadian now living in Malaysia. Hello there. Anyway, Japan. Never thought of doing Japan. I'd like to go to Japan to go to Toyota City and go and watch them build Land Cruisers. That would interest me. So if any of you from Toyota, if any from Toyota are watching this, please send me an invitation so I can come and you can wine and dine me and I can do a film shoot in your Land Cruiser factory. There you go. All right, guys, I'm gonna wrap it up now. I've had a very, very nice morning. It's over 2 hours. I hope I've managed to answer the important question. Those guys who contributed via Super Chat, thank you so much. Very, very much appreciated. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. Time for brekkie. Yes, Mr. Marcus, it is time for brekkie. Bye-bye, everybody. Thank you so much for watching, supporting the channel, doing what you do.